Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Shope and the Bulldog.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living.
Wow, it's just like it's a Wednesday in November with that open plane with our man John Clayton on the Wester Hotline. I am the Bulldog, Mike Shope. Sadly, John here has the day off today, John, so you're just stuck with me.
How did Mike get the day off?
He just decided he wanted to go see the Blue Jays and the Red Sox this afternoon up at Rogers Center in Toronto, so he's sitting in a nice third baseline seat watching David Price and the Red Sox play the Blue Jays. And
wow.
I don't even know how that game is going. I don't know if Kyle just said it.
He gets to call the shots, just say, hey, I'm out of here, see you, bye.
Hey. He's been dealing with me. I've been running around for weeks here just doing different Fridays off with my son's hockey, so he owed me one. So no big deal. So you, sir, you caused some waves. You're not quite the Game of Thrones finale, but this the Jets could trade Le'Veon Bell thing last week. I just saw that cropping up all over the place on Twitter. Were you suggesting that they will do that, or that it's something that if they wanted to do it, it would be financially good for the team acquiring him? Like, what do you have on Bell and the Jets right now, John?
It's just Adam Gase. I mean, again, he's the acting general manager. Nothing's active right now, but I think you can see you've got a coach who's probably going to get a GM that's going to be pretty close to him, taking the same philosophy that you don't want to pay a running back. And so $13.1 million for a running back isn't really what he wants. And, of course, if you can get a trade at some point, you take all the guarantees and everything out. And so the logic says is that it's not like they're actively going to do anything with him at the moment, but if somebody's going to call and need a running back, they're going to listen. Because Adam Gase, because remember, he's a disciple of Mike Martz. Even though Mike had a Hall of Fame running back in Marshall Faulk, the idea is to pass the football. Now, Bell fits perfectly in this idea that he's, one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league, but still, you've got a coach who doesn't believe in paying running backs. And at $13.1 million, it's maybe going to be more next year than this year. I could easily see him trading him if there's enough interest in a team trying to pick him up.
How much does Adam Gase deserve as much power as he seemingly has acquired here, at least for the time being, if not in the long run? Because if he has, say, as much say in who his GM ultimately is as, say, Sean McDermott had when he got here, I feel like he chose Brandon Bean to be the GM. Does Gase deserve that?
No, he doesn't deserve it with a 23-25 record. And he had control of the 53-man roster, but look what he ended up doing. He chased away some of their best players. He got Mike Tannenbaum to trade Jay Ajayi. They traded away Jarvis Landry, Pro Bowl guy. They let Mike Pouncey go. He had a Pro Bowl season. I mean, he let so many guys, and most of the guys were on offense. Remember that. And so, Adam is one where he wants the locker room to respond positively. If there's something there that he doesn't like, then he's going to speak up, and he's going to do that. And so, has he earned it? Absolutely not. I mean, because, again, one of the reasons that he got fired was a below-average record and the fact that he probably got too involved in personnel.
Seems like maybe he might say he didn't get a chance to have the deck fully cleared. Right. There are some similarities, I think, to maybe he and McDermott. It seemed like Gase was on on a bit of a culture mission, right? That's why like Jay Ajayi gets left home before the opener in Seattle that one year, and Domokong Su and like Landry. These are guys that maybe don't have the best reputations as being team first guys, and maybe Gase would say in his defense that he didn't get to finish the job, whereas here McDermott and Bean, I think, are now done sort of shedding the guys that they didn't want because of high price tags or whatever, some personality or character thing that didn't jive with their idea of what the culture should be. Like, I wonder if Gase feels like he got shafted.
Probably did, and I think that's just the unfortunate bad nature of the National Football League. You know, the NFL stands for not for long. And so if you're trying to turn a program around, I mean, literally, if you tear a team down, it's going to take you 4 to 5 years, if not longer, because it takes you 2 years to build up each unit, 2 years on offense and 2 years on defense. And if you get fired after year three in 48 games, then you really haven't had the proper time. And you look at and you see the perennial playoff teams, or at least the teams that are in the playoffs 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 years, they're the ones with more stability. You know, it's the Sean Paytons with him there with Mickey Loomis. It's Seattle with Pete Carroll and John Snyder. I mean, you just go down the list. I mean, you know, it was there for most of the time with Green Bay, with Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy. But the more you keep changing, the worse it gets. And you can see, like, for example, with the 8 changes this year, there's already problems. And, again, you see it with the Jets because now you have a coach who gets there and he wasn't on the same page as the general manager as far as personnel. You see it down in Tampa Bay because, you know, they're switching to a 3-4 defense and they just simply don't have 3-4 personnel and they lose Jason Pierre-Paul. And so it's like, in the end, I mean, you need continuity and you need the front office to work together. Unfortunately for the Jets, that didn't come down together.
John Clayton on the Western Hotline with us here on WGR. So how's Bell in all of this stuff with the Jets? Did I see a quote from him late last week saying, like, don't believe everything you read or that something like that? Like, how's he feeling about how this is all going in New York?
I think he feels good because he's got guaranteed money. He can't feel good because I think he now knows he's got a coach that's not totally in his corner. And it's not a personal thing. It's not like he doesn't like Le'Veon Bell, but Adam Gase just doesn't believe in money going to a running back. And so because of that, I think that he's got to be apprehensive, but it doesn't seem as though he cares. And the reason he doesn't care, he's not there. I mean, he's going to attend the mini camp, but here's a new coach, a new offense, and you want to try to, you know, get together with him, and he's not. He's training on his own. Hey, that's fine if you're Edger and James, you got Peyton Manning there, you've been there in the system for 3-4 years, and you want to go down to Miami and train and get your body right and your mind right. Well, here's a guy that didn't play last year. I mean, he got out of shape as the year was going on. You know, he got too fat, and now, you know, he's training on his own, but is he going to do it the right way? And after missing a year, remember, here's where the danger of all this is. And what we saw today with Reuben Foster, it's the shark nature of going in the first OTA or the first mini camp or the first day of training camp, and you go there and you have a tendency, because if you didn't train your tendons right, you're going to blow out an ACL, you're going to blow out Achilles. I mean, you watch over the course of this week, there's going to be 3 or 4 more Achilles/ACL injuries that are going to happen, because if you didn't train the tendons right, something's going to pop.
Let's stay in the division here for a bit, because it's pretty interesting to me, like, with all this, I don't know if it's exactly controversy, but the Jets are certainly interesting. This story about the coach not wanting the high price free agent and all this stuff, and then the GM, you know, running the draft, running free agency, he gets fired. Not right after the draft either. It's like there was still somewhat of a power struggle that went on for a couple of weeks before McCagnan finally got ousted. Yet the Jets are mostly viewed, I think, John, despite a new coach and a new offensive system for Sam Darnold going into his second year, but first year in a new system, as being ahead of the Bills. And I wonder if this instability up top maybe brings them back a little bit enough for the Bills to perhaps pass them.
It could, and one of the reasons that the Jets are ahead of the Bills right now is because Sam Darnold is ahead of Josh Allen. And you've got a coach who is real good with quarterbacks. I mean, so good, for a matter of fact, that, I mean, he's the one who actually got more out of Jay Cutler than most, because they actually got along. And so if he can take Sam Darnold to a higher level, which I would imagine is going to be better this year, that's going to help, and that's going to keep things going again. And remember, they've been actively spending now for the last couple years, and so maybe for personnel they're a little bit ahead. But now here's where the problem's going to come in for the Jets, is if indeed Adam has problems with some of the personalities. And remember, part of the reason that Christopher Johnson ended up firing Mike Maccagnan is that he took chances on guys that had character issues. And you've seen with the arrests that they've had, the DUIs that they've had, all those different things, you know, that could be a problem. And I can guarantee from what we saw of Adam down in Miami, he's simply not going to tolerate it. I mean, he's going to try to, if he doesn't like something and it's not going to go, he's going to get rid of the guy. I mean, you know, the Darren Lee thing was no surprise. You know, I know that everybody's saying, how can you take a first-round pick like Darren Lee, you know, middle first-round pick just from a couple years ago, and trade him for a six? But if you look at the first-round trades after 3 years for guys that are 18 and lower, it's all fifth, sixth-round picks. And that's just because what happens is a team that picks him up is picking up a guaranteed contract. And so you're unloading a guaranteed contract, and that gets things going. But, you know, if Adam comes in there and does the Jay Ajayi-type trade and some of the other moves, that's going to hurt, not help.
The other thing on Lee is, didn't everyone in the league know he was pretty much a spare part with the Jets anyways?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's why, I mean, I think that Mike Maccagnan was holding out for a five. But if you look at, like, for example, the 2015 draft, I mean, there was about five trades at the bottom of the round that were virtually for nothing. I mean, you know, that was the, you know, fifth, sixth-round pick. You know, it was Stephon Anthony, and it was Lakin Tomlinson, and Darius Randall. I mean, those all guys went for a song. I mean, then you saw the move up higher where Danny Shelton, after going into his fourth year, was traded away for a third-round pick, but they had to kind of give back a fifth-round pick just to make that work. So the equivalent value, if you're dumping a player that's a former first-round pick with a guaranteed contract, is getting a fifth or sixth-round pick. That's why, you know, Adam didn't sweat it. As soon as he got the offer from the Chiefs, he just said, fine, sixth round, good, you're gone.
We will get to the Bills here with John Clayton, who's joining us on the Western Hotline. But before we do, the Dolphins. People have been talking about tanking. They've traded for Josh Rosen. Of course, they changed coaches. Gase is now with the Jets and pick up a former New England assistant to be the head coach now. Like, what's the outlook there? I would imagine pretty bleak.
Yeah, pretty bad. And because, you know, they, even though they don't admit it, I think everybody understands the way that they've dumped talent. They're trying to get in a position to get a quarterback next year. Now, if Josh Rosen goes down there and does well, it probably screws up their plans, but at least they know they have a quarterback. But also, if they don't win, I mean, Josh Rosen's in the same position he is this year, because it's pretty clear with a better group of quarterbacks coming out next year that they're going to take one and then get rid of Josh Rosen. So he may be with, you know, three teams in 3 years, but, I mean, you look at it, I mean, I think they only have three Pro Bowl players left in the team, you know, after getting rid of the Mike Pouncey's and getting rid of Jarvis Landry and Cameron Wake and all those different players. I mean, there's no team in football that has fewer Pro Bowl players than the Dolphins. And, you know, that's not necessarily good. And so I would have to think it's going to be a long season. And all that's going to do is help the Patriots, because, you know, what's happened in three of the last 4 years, and at least you can credit Adam Gase for this, is that, you know, in the home game between New England and Miami, they've won three out of the last four. But now, if the Dolphins are going to be a bad team, that's going to be another win and a possible 5-1, 6-0 season in the division for the Patriots.
You got to really wonder about Rosen at this point, John. Like, he was on a terrible Cardinal team. And, you know, I'm sure he didn't do himself any favors with his play either, but I think he was in pretty tough there. I think most people acknowledge that. And now Miami wants to see if he can play, but, I mean, good luck. I mean, good luck finding out if you can play with, I mean, what do you got around him?
Not much. I mean, and I guess you can say that we talk about an unfair reputation, but it's like, hey, if you want the first pick in the draft, Josh Rosen's your guy, because at least with how he played last year, with all the problems that they had. I mean, they only had maybe two or three legitimate receivers. They were bad at tight end, had seven guys on the offensive line on injured reserve. They lost the entire starting offensive line. And then the play calling at the running back position, you know, didn't get the running back, David Johnson, to get yards. And so it all failed. But then part of the problem is, I think you can see that personality-wise or whatever it is, it just didn't go with Josh Rosen. I know Josh was complaining, maybe whining a little bit, that the general manager, Steve Keim, hadn't sent anything to him in 2 to 3 weeks or even a couple months. Well, I mean, you know, you kind of get the feeling with that personality that Josh Rosen had, you know, it didn't win over the front office, and certainly it didn't win over the players on the team.
I mean, I wanted to ask you about that. I'm putting off the Bills here, but we'll squeeze it in. I promise.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't really care, John. I was telling the audience that like, we just talk about football in general. You're fine. But this thing with Keim not talking to him and telling him what was up. You know, they did choose to draft him. Like, they knew his personality. They did their homework. Like, they made that choice. They traded up last year to do it. I mean, I just don't think at all that is how you should do business in any line of work. Where you, like, but especially with a top 10 draft pick quarterback, to just sort of freeze him out. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's good on Arizona at all.
No, I agree. I would agree with that. I mean, they did give him the benefit of getting top 10 money. You know, because everything is all guaranteed. The fifth-year option now is at the high level, not the low level. And so, you know, they did financially take care of him.
Yeah.
So you can say that was the positive. But, yeah, you're right. And I think that, I mean, you can just see the strain. For example, was it fair to Josh Rosen that on the first week that they started off-season program that, and he was the first guy in the building. He was actually there before Cliff Kingsbury, that by Tuesday and Wednesday of that week, they're bringing in Skyler Murray to be for his visit, and it's like, oh, couldn't you have scheduled it the week before when Josh wasn't there? They purposely didn't allow Josh to have a press conference, and so what he had to do was go on SITV and have a press conference and kind of express his frustration. And you can see even with some of the things that he was tweeting out that he was upset. So you're right. I mean, they didn't treat him well. I mean, they treated him like they wanted him to get out of there. And sure enough, I mean, you knew once they made the selection of Skyler Murray that they were going to trade him.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
sure enough, they did by the second day of the draft.
I guess I am naive enough to have just assumed all through this process that I'm talking about pre-draft, figuring out what they're going to do, that they would have been at least communicating to him. You know, they could have even been lying, but I mean, just talking to him about what's going on, or at least admitting like we're not sure what we're doing. We'll keep you appraised. I think it's just stunning that the organization basically froze him out.
Yeah, I mean, the coach did talk to him. I mean, it wasn't like this was a collective effort, but the coach, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, did stay in contact with him, did call him on the time it was traded, and so at least there was a communication from the coach, but nothing from the GM. But, one thing with Josh Rosen, I mean, he's one of those guys that, he's a hard guy sometimes to communicate with. I mean, he'll always ask questions when you tell him something, and if you ask him a question, he'll come back with a question. I mean, I know talking to him on network radio, I mean, he's sometimes just gives one-word answers. And I know that we got so frustrated on Sirius one time that Pat Kerwin and I were talking to him, and Pat just threw up his hands and says, "Hey, so, Josh, what interests you the most?" And he goes, "Tennis." Like, okay. Then somebody in the organization for Arizona, I don't know who it is, leaked out that Josh is an environmentalist. Now, I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, but it's like, they're saying things like that. So it's one where it's better for him to get out of there.
Yeah.
And again, he can thank him at least for giving him a good contract.
I wonder how the GM there, Keim, gets to trade up to draft a quarterback 10th overall. It's a disaster. The team's a disaster. He's kind of a disaster, away from the job, and then hires a coach who's under 500 and gets to draft another quarterback. I'm stunned the guy gets to keep his job.
Yeah, and clearly his job's in jeopardy right now, but he's a good GM. I mean, look what he was able to do with Bruce Arians as a coach. I mean, he built that team up to a point where it did get to a conference championship game as a perennial playoff team, and I think he's still one of the brighter general managers in the game. But, you can see what ended up happening last year is that, Mike Bidwell was hoping to get an offensive coach. They hired Steve Wilks. Wilks came in there and was terrible, and, the offense was awful, and so they ended up losing. And you can see, after the season that they were going to keep Keim, but they probably Bidwell went to him and says, "I want you to get an offensive coach. I told you to get one last year, and you didn't do it. You better get one this year." And some of the offensive coaches just didn't want to come there, and so end up scrambling around, and you get Kingsbury in the air raid offense.
It'll be really interesting to watch and see how that all unfolds for sure. All right, the Bills. I spent a little time here earlier today talking with our Sal Capaccio, John, about Josh Allen and, like, what's a what's a good year? Like, what's a reasonable expectation to have? And he, as he so often does, drew, I think, a very good comparison between Allen going into year two and what you saw from Trubisky last year with Chicago, which was 3,200 yards in 14 games. So over a full season, you're talking about close to 3,700 yards or so. 24 touchdowns, 12 picks. So add one or two to each column there if you want for a full season. Do you think that that's a good step for Josh Allen?
I think it'd be a great step. And the great part is maybe, you know, maybe I think that is a very fair comparison because, I remember early in the season, if you look at Mitch Trubisky, once he got through the 15-play script, he struggled. And I give Matt Nagy just great credit for developing him and getting him better as the season goes on. And Josh, you know, when he came in of the first-round picks last year, he was the most behind. I think that's just understandable. I mean, he had some of the best talent. I mean, that arm is just absolutely incredible. But, I mean, you knew it was going to take time. And so it may be a very similar, on the similar path, where he starts out the season. Now, again, it's not going to be like a script issue or anything like that, but he may start out slow. But if they can bring him along as the year goes on, yeah, I think it can be a pretty fair season. And I agree. You know, it's not going to be a 4,000-yard passing year. I think you can see that they need to make sure that they run the ball, and they certainly have enough running backs right now. But, you know, where you give the front office and that a lot of credit is that, I mean, could they end up getting more players for him? I mean, they've way overboard on offensive line. I mean, what, they could have four or five new starters on the offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, they got skilled players, tight ends. They are loading them up at running backs, and so they've been very aggressive in trying to surround him, you know, more than anything else. And so that will take time because there's going to be so many new players just to kind of integrate and get on the same page that, you know, slow start's probably going to happen, but, you know, at least the commitment was there not to starve him like, you know, Josh Rosen was starved last year.
Yeah, you could have five starters at new positions. I think Deion Dawkins is a part of their five, but if someone, Ty Ensicki, goes and plays left tackle because Cody Ford, the second-round pick, is going to be the right tackle, then maybe Dawkins ducks inside and plays guard, in which case you would very likely have five players that are at least in new positions, four of them new to the team overall might be happening there.
Yeah, but again, it's like and it's funny because, you know, we're talking about the bad things that were going on in Arizona, but, you know, when I size everything up, particularly from the draft, and even when you look at the off season, I think that you have to make the argument that the two teams that did the best for themselves talent-wise was the Arizona Cardinals and the Buffalo Bills because, again, they did it in volumes. I mean, you know, you look at the 15 players that they signed in free agency, unrestricted free agency. I mean, you look what they did in the draft. That bodes well for the Bills. You know, the Cardinals, they were one of the most aggressive team in street free agents and free agency. You know, they ended up getting 10 guys in free agency, 11 guys in the draft. So, I mean, at least the numbers are there, and now it's a matter of putting it all together.
Yeah, they put one contract is like a somewhat of a whopper, in that Mitch Morse might be the highest paid center in the league now. But everything else they did in free agency, John, the way I understand it anyway, looking at the different cap websites, I think they can walk away from just about anything without much penalty if it doesn't go well.
No, so, that's the thing I did like about what they did, because you're right, you know, and I'll explain the Mitch Moore situation, is that, you know, they kept everything, you know, at $8 million, $9 million or less. They didn't overspend, and that's the big problem in free agency, because if you overspend, you know, and the guy doesn't play like a Pro Bowl player, you're cutting him after 2 years. And so with the number that they signed and the fact that they didn't go overboard, that's good. You know, I think that you can see on the Mitch Morris thing, that was a pure thing of total need. If you look at the way free agency was and the center position overall, there was two legitimate guys at the center position, Mitch Morris being one, and Paradise, who ended up going to Carolina, and there was only two legitimate centers in the draft. And so you only have four options, and you want a center, and they wanted a center. Remember, they backed it up in case, you know, it didn't go with Mitch Morse, and they had Spencer Long to move in there, but now they can just have Spencer as maybe a utility player or starting guard. But if they wanted a quality center, there was only four available, and at least they get one out of the four in Morse.
So you add it all up. Like, do you think some of the love, I don't know how much you pay attention to it, but the Bills have gotten, they got their share of fans out there in the media, the national media, saying, like, look out, they're up and coming, they're a surprise team. How do you feel about that?
I think that's the case. I mean, it's like I'm not going to promote them as a playoff team. I mean, I think that, you know, this is the turnaround year. And normally if you're having a big turnaround, it takes, you know, like 3-4 years. Usually by that third year, things start to go together. But what you like is that, and, you know, where I was hoping they would do a little bit more in the first couple years, you know, getting more volume is because it was like they were breaking it down as opposed to building it back up. But where I think that, you know, they have to get the love is how aggressive they were at reasonable prices of getting talent in there. And I think they did it the smart way. So, again, there should be a good improvement on the team this year.
All right, John. This has been wonderful, thorough. We didn't get around the league very much. We ended up just staying in the AFC East with a little dabble of the Cardinals in there. But that's how it goes. Time only allows for so much. Your spring good? Summer looking promising?
Yep.
Everything good with you?
Everything's good. I mean, staying busy, so that's always a good thing.
All right, man. We appreciate the time very much, John. Thanks for the visit, and we'll look forward to talking with you pretty soon, I'm sure.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. That's our man, John Clayton, on the West Hur Hotline. So, what say you? Realistic expectations on some numbers for Josh Allen. We'll lay that back out. I'll look for your calls. We got about a half an hour until Paul Hamilton's with us at the top of the hour. So 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What do you think is realistic to expect from Josh Allen in year two with all the upgrades? We'll get into that when we continue. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Schopp has a day off today. This is WGR.
I think just keeping it simple. Everyone's working for each other. I said it before, when our forwards are back checking and fore checking, and our D have good gaps, our D are tough to play against and not giving them a lot of room. So we just kind of keep rolling over the lines, get their D a little bit tired when we can to keep zone time. And I think this time of the year, zone time's huge, just to wear them out a little bit and create a little havoc.
That is Jaden Schwartz of the Blues. They smoked the Sharks in an afternoon game 5 in San Jose, 5-0 last night. Schwartz is having a hell of a playoff. And the Blues are one win, a home win tomorrow night. Game 6 is tomorrow night in St. Louis. They are that victory away from a meeting with the Bruins in the Stanley Cup Finals. It was made public. I saw it today, so I don't know if it was known maybe earlier on the weekend. But game 1 of the finals, whatever happens here, the Blues can wrap this up tomorrow. They will wait until next Monday to start the Stanley Cup final. That's what's the deal going to be. It's going to be in Boston. They have home ice. So game 1, not until a week from tonight of the final. And that's the story there. The Sharks just they got injury trouble now. Carlson's hurt and it's bad. There's all this other stuff too. Hurdle got knocked out of that game yesterday. I think Pavelski's, you know, in trouble again. It's looking pretty bad, pretty bleak. Carlson, obviously a huge piece there. He barely played in the third period of that game yesterday. So anyway, we'll get more hockey coming up at the top of the hour. Paul Hamilton will be along to join me and talk about you know, what's going on with the Sabres now that we're into Skinner Watch. I've not gotten an email. I don't know that that's been sponsored yet, but the opportunity is there if you are interested. Like, you call the bosses here, because Skinner Watch is what we're all about now on the Sabres. They got their coach hired last week, and now it's on to Skinner Watch. So we'll get into that with Paul coming up at the top of the hour. I left you off at Josh Allen expectations, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers. What is a good number? Passing yards wise, touchdown wise, interception wise. I feel like I kind of want to take a certain amount of rushing yards for granted. You know, like 500, fine. I know that he had around that last year in only, what did he play last year? 12 games ultimately? Yeah, 12 games, started 11, you know, started, you know, got in at halftime of the game in the opener. So, you know, a full season, maybe you'd get more, but I think a part of the plan here either should be or is to maybe trim some of those rushing yards off and turn them into passing yards. I think that's what ultimately you're going to want. I mean, I don't want to completely rein Allen in to the point where he can't do something he does very well, which is run and run effectively. And, I mean, he's a weapon doing that. But there's also, I don't know, to an extent, it looks like I'm not that good at the throwing part yet, so I'm just going to do this. And, you know, okay. But eventually, if you're going to stick and be the guy I think Bills fans and the organization are hoping he's going to be, that gets reined in some and gets replaced by more effective passing. So, you know, I was just sitting around. I had a lot of downtime. My kid was at a statewide hockey thing in Syracuse, and there was more sitting around than there was actually watching of the hockey for me, not so much for him. And so at one point I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, what do I 3,000 yards? That used to be a number. I mean, it still is a number. It's not a number to really aspire to. It's not really that good at all anymore in the league. The 21st ranked passing yardage leader in the league last year threw for 3,000 yards, and that was only in 11 games. I'm trying to find someone who played a full season and was at that kind of number, and I mean, that got the player just does not really exist. So it's not any longer really a good benchmark, right? Like 200 yards a game, even is. That's 3,500 yards, right? I think about that anyway.
Yeah, just about.
Right. So, like, that's, okay. That would be an improvement for Allen. I liked how Sal answered this, looking at Trubisky from last year, and he's right around there. He's 220 a game. And, like, that's okay. Like, that would be progress, and... Excuse me, he's at 230 a game last year, Trubisky was. I looked at Darnold's numbers by mistake just now. And you know, it's kind of cool. I like the parallel there. I like the comparison there because the Bears last year in the offseason, you know, they went hard to go get talent. They drafted Trubisky and didn't really have that much for him to work with in that first year. And he wasn't supposed to play, and then he did, right? It's a little like they had Glennon that they'd signed in the offseason, and that didn't last very long at all. And eventually Trubisky got on the field, and then in his first offseason as their starting quarterback, it was time to go get him stuff. And they went and they got him some stuff. And I guess I wouldn't say that they got him like the highest-end stuff. You know, they got him some pieces. I think... the pieces that they got, I'd feel better about than say what the Bills did this offseason, but I don't hate the two as comparables.
They didn't add like all pros or anything.
Right. They didn't trade for AJ Green.
Right.
Or they didn't get Antonio Brown. They didn't, you know, they got guys that are, you know, respectable. And again, probably a cut above the guys that the Bills added, at least as far as receiver goes, skill position wise, right? And Tariq Cohen's a big part of that, a big wild card in that. He was there for that rookie year, too, for Trubisky. But he's a piece the Bills don't quite have here yet, unless Devin Singletary turns into someone who can really catch the ball. And he did not really do that in college, so we'll see on that. But I think it's a good parallel. It's where you want to be with your franchise quarterback. And okay, I'm going to get some stuff, and like let's see a step. And Trubisky was not out of this world great for the Bears. He had his moments, but you know, 230 yards a game is respectable. Like he only played 14 games. You add another close to 500 yards onto his total, and he's right in the middle of the league. And that's where that would get him. Yeah. That's the middle guys in the league are 3,700. Matthew Stafford was 16th with 3,700 yards passing last year. Stafford, and he's had big, big years.
Right, and even you look at, like, Trubisky, he was efficient last year. I don't think anyone would call him, like, no one would say he was the reason, like, the sole reason Chicago made the playoffs last season. And to me, I'm thinking about kind of the same thing here. Like, Allen, I'm not expecting him year two to be, like, driving the bus. Like, he is the guy carrying you on your back to a playoff race. But I think I'd want at least, like what you're talking about, like what Trubisky was last year wasn't just, you know, better than what he was year one with better pieces around him. He also wasn't, carrying his team to the playoffs, but he was efficient enough that if the defense was good enough and if the pieces around him were performing well enough, you could be a playoff team. Now, the only thing I might want to stop myself with Allen on that is I didn't like Trubisky as a prospect coming out, and I just feel like Allen's ceiling with his physical tools is so much higher that maybe he would have a greater chance of like taking a bigger step than Trubisky did. Because I don't know if Trubisky's capable of the step that I think some of us are hoping Allen can take.
That's interesting, because Trubisky is thought of as very accurate, isn't he?
Very accurate, yeah.
So he's got that, and Allen has yet to really demonstrate ever that he's got that. It's just you're hoping that the other stuff ends up overcoming that, right?
Yeah.
Athleticism, the big plays, and all that stuff. I think like as a tools, I think Allen has him beat tools wise. It's a question of whether or not you can effectively play the position without that accuracy. I think it's going to be so interesting to see what Cole Beasley ends up doing for the Bills. I just think that is going to be the thing that I'm going to – you can tell. Like, I'm borderline obsessed with it, because it does not seem like something that Allen on paper is going to be good at, and yet they've invested, not a crazy contract or anything, but they went out and got a guy that's as good at doing the thing he does as maybe anybody in the league. Like, he's a very valuable asset. It's slot receiver, short stuff, safety valve, whatever you want to throw on it, whatever label you want to throw on it, he's excellent at that. And so can Allen make that work? Like that, I think that's a key to keeping drives going and becoming ultimately a more dependable player at the position, as opposed to just, jumping over Anthony Barr. Like, that's awesome. That's great. I might need you to just throw an 8-yard pass. Like that's the thing. And I think Beasley is the guy for that. Any thoughts on this? We'd love to hear from you. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Mike Schoep has the day off. He watched the Blue Jays get hammered at home by the Red Sox, 12-2. Four home runs for Boston. I'm the Bulldog, back after this on WGR. Deal of the daytime. Get in the fast lane to fun with two 10-lap go-kart races at Grand Island Fun Center for $12. It's a $24 value for just $12. It's the deal of the day from My Buffalo Perks. Details at mybuffaloperks.com. Rich is first up this segment. Hi, Rich. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Bulldog, the old BN days. I loved listening to you back then.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm still kicking.
Yeah, great segment right here. I think Cole Beasley could be the secret weapon, because what you had said earlier, and this is what's going to be the progression of Josh Allen. If he can get the ball to Cole Beasley, he could be the next Wes Welker, because that's one of the deficiencies of Allen, the throwing. If he can get the ball to him, then it's going to jam the middle. And then I am telling you right now, I am licking my chops for Foster, Brown, or even Duke Williams if he can make the team. I think if he can get the ball to Beasley to loosen up the middle of the field, and he can take the shots down the field, this could be some scary good stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a big – the reason I'm so fixated on it is I think if Allen doesn't prove that he can utilize Beasley, then teams are just not going to really worry about it. I mean, and they're probably not going to worry. I mean, you certainly don't like die over the guy that's running the shortest routes. But if it becomes a go-to first down conversion, third down conversion maker for the Bills, then it becomes more of a priority. And if Allen doesn't get Beasley off, then it's just sort of a piece that becomes just a sort of a dead area, and I think teams will figure that out pretty quick. Brian is next up. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey, Bulldog. The first thing I said is I've never been so pissed off at Bulldog for his one comment, and usually I'd say in all the years I've listened, I've never been upset with what you said, and usually I'm upset with Mike mainly, so you got to keep him around.
don't worry, he's not going anywhere.
When you were saying about Josh Allen's accuracy issues, and I just want to say completion percentage and accuracy are two completely different things. If you actually watched all the games last year and watched the throws, you knew that Josh Allen was throwing accurate passes, I would say, more than 80%. But he had a lot of drops. He also had a lot of scrambling. And he also threw the ball down the field the most. I don't know. I just didn't agree with that accuracy. Accuracy is my always biggest question with a quarterback. You need accuracy to be good. I think he has it. I've seen quarterbacks that don't have it. Comparably, E.J. Manuel did not have accuracy. That's why he is retired, I guess. But that was basically my comment. I think he.
All right. Well, you want to stay on the line and get more pissed off at me, or do you want me to just listen on the radio? Because I don't know. That sounds like nonsense to me, Brian. Like, it sounds like you want him to be accurate. I watched every throw he made. I watched every throw he made extremely closely. It's my job to watch every throw he makes extremely closely. And I'm not just basing it on completion percentage. I defended him in the New England game when I thought he could have had a much better game if not for some passes that weren't caught. But 53% is not indicative of someone who was pretty accurate and just had some bad luck. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. And it needs to be better. I don't think it's ever going to be his strong suit. And I think you got to try to find a way to work around that, and that's why this Beasley piece is so interesting to me, because it feels to me like the Bills are asking him to do something that he has yet to show during college or in the NFL that he can do, and I think they're gonna need to see him do it. They want to have no excuses for him not being able to do it, and I hope he takes a step. I think even if he takes a step, he's going to be, I'm hoping for 60% from him. And I think the number is a pretty good indicator of where you are with the ball. He did not have a disproportionately high number of dropped passes last year.
No, I'm actually looking at it right now. So he was second in the league in highest drop rate, but it's only just over 6%. So even if you, like, the completion percentage number, if your problem with it is it doesn't include drops, we'll throw that entire 6% onto his 52.
And you're still below 60.
And it's not even reasonable to expect a quarterback's going to have zero drops the entire season.
Right.
You're still only at 58%, which is not that good.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, that, I mean, I think that's just, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this year unfolds. Because Allen, a year ago, was a very divisive figure amongst Bills fans. It wasn't a universally acclaimed pick. And I like the kid, too. I like what he's done so far. I like his personality. On the field, off the field, I mean, whatever. But, like, he looks the part. I think there's still a long way to go for him to demonstrate that he can be a master of the ordinary is how I phrase it with Sal. I mean, I think there's a lot of work to do. And they've put some pieces in place to try to make it happen. And, like, let's see. You know, I'm not pessimistic about the overall success rate here, but I can't give him credit for something that he's not yet. And what he's not yet is an accurate NFL passer. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. This is like the Howard Simon Show. I'm, like, super late. Paul's coming up after this, and we'll shift to some hockey and continue. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Schopp has the day off today. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.